donate to this NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. Well, coming up today, we'll hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. It's the end of the year wrap-up, but it's also a time for us to look forward to some of the big issues hitting Florida. So we'll talk about some of the big Florida issues and the future of those issues in just a moment. And then later on, there's always a New Year's tradition here in the Tampa Bay area. The comedian George Carlin would usually make a stop doing one of his comedy tours here in the Tampa Bay area around New Year's. We're going to hear some classic George Carlin later in the program. First, one listener comment about the subject that we've been hitting on for the past few days. That is the President Trump's shutdown of the government over the issue of the non-funding of his border wall. Here's what one listener had to say.
My name is Meg Keller from St. Petersburg. I'm calling in reference to the wall issues. There's a popular refrain in Spanish that serves the purpose as per the blasted Trump wall and drugs and or people coming over the border. El que hace la ley hace la trampa. Literally translated, he who makes the law makes the loophole. Or more appropriately, every law has its loophole. Same goes for the wall. No wall will keep people and or drugs out. The money could be better used to create an immigrant guest worker system. And also, we should be working on our own societal, economic, and mental health issues leading to this vast country drug addiction we need to have these illegal drugs crossing the border for. It's time that the United States take a look at itself and take responsibility for whom has caused all these border problems.
A listener comment that came in after last Thursday's show that came in. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Here's Florida This Week, which is a PBS show that airs on WEDU-TV that I host. And the panelists include Daniel Ruth of the Tampa Bay Times. Coming up next, it was a year marked by tragedies and some victories, and of some dreams being dashed, with Florida facing major challenges on the environmental front and a potential game-changing amendment. We'll look back on the major stories of 2018 on a special edition of Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week our panelists are Dan Ruth is a professor at the Honors College of the University of South Florida. Ernest Hooper is a columnist at the Tampa Bay Times and the host of That's All I'm Saying here on WEDU. April Schiff is a political consultant and a Republican. And Gail Andrews is a political consultant and a Democrat. Well, Happy New Year, everybody. Great to see you. Well, we're back again with our year in review with some of yours and my favorite panelists to mull over what happened during the past 12 months. We'll count down the top 10 state and local stories of the year as voted on by our guests. We're going to start with story number 10. After the locals failed to apparently come up with enough public and private money, the Rays baseball team called year out on plans to build that new $900 million stadium in Tampa's Ybor City. So, Dan, was it ever a possibility?
No.
I was sitting at the, I think maybe you were at that press conference too, Ernest, in Ybor when they announced this gleaming new, shrine to baseball. And I'm sitting there, it's all very nice. The consultants do a nice job with the renderings. And then they said, oh, by the way, it's going to cost $900 million. And right then I said, we're dead. It's just dead.
The team seems to be waiting for either local government
or
local corporations.
They want some fairy dust to sprinkle down on them for their stadium. It was never going to happen. And the other thing that I think really damaged the deal was Mr. Sternberg was less than forthcoming about how much money the team or he was willing to put up for this. And it came maybe we could put $150 million up or $200 million. No, man, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Don't think so.
Well, Ernest?
Here's what I don't understand. Now they are returning to St. Petersburg after spending 3 years telling us that St. Petersburg was not the right location for the stadium. what's going to happen now? I don't think it's going to work. I think this team's going to end up leaving Tampa Bay. It was nice to have them. I'm a baseball fan. I'm not sure we're going to ask them to stay.
All right, but
they're not leaving. They're not leaving.
Are we out of the day when local communities are going to put up tax
millions of dollars
for stadium?
Anticipating your question, what city isn't certifiably insane is going to agree to pony up hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars? I don't care whether it's Charlotte or Montreal or Portland. None of those cities are that stupid that they'd be willing to get on the hook for that kind of money.
So they'll have the same problem wherever they look.
I don't know about that.
All right.
I'm not convinced of that.
Okay. Well, as the school year began here in Florida, statewide there was a teacher shortage with many districts trying to fill classroom slots. So, Ernest, I jumped the gun there a little bit, but Ernest, what do you make of the statewide teacher shortages?
Well, it's a real problem. You know, 3 years ago, the number of advertised vacancies at the beginning of the school year was 2,400. The next year, it went up to 3,000. This past fall, it jumped to 4,000. And I think there are some things that can be done to correct this teacher shortage, but it needs to start with a change of attitude in Tallahassee. We have a legislature that is trying to undermine the public school system. How are you going to attract teachers to the state of Florida when our legislative leaders are repeatedly saying that they don't believe in this system?
And if you're right and the trend line is up, next year it's going to be even worse.
I think, and it's going to be worse in the most challenging schools, Rob. Mm-hmm. When we talk about vacancies, we're not talking about schools in the suburb. We're talking about schools in the inner city that most need not only teachers, but experienced teachers, veteran teachers.
With the new education commissioner, Richard Corcoran, in there heading the Department of Education, he's a big fan of charter schools and school vouchers. Does that do anything to solve this problem of a teacher shortage in public schools?
Could I add something? The main problem is, first of all, Corcoran and the whole thing about choice schools. Choice schools will never take over the public schools. The idea is public schools need to remedy the problem. One of the biggest problems we have, Ernest, is, for example, at Florida A&M, we are not recruiting young people to teach. It's the most honorable profession you can have. It is the greatest profession in the world, other than being a doctor or something like that with life-saving capabilities. They're graduating these very, very small classes of kids to go out and teach. And they don't want to do it. They want to make money, but no one, the gratification is enormous. And everyone here who's taught knows that. Right. But we're not recruiting them.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, our story number eight. In July, an African-American man named Marcaeus McLaughlin was shot and killed in a parking lot near Clearwater. The shooter, who is white, mainly initially claimed that he was justified under the state's Stand Your Ground law. After reviewing the case, prosecutors did bring a manslaughter charge. The matter caused a debate about Stand Your Ground and about how our justice system handles white shooters and black victims. Gail, let's start with you on that one. Have we learned anything from that?
I think so, because a lot of times we believe, and most of the time it is true, that public outcry and so forth doesn't have much influence over what happens in our courtrooms. And actually, that's the way it's supposed to be. But I think that this particular case was a major turning point in terms of what's happening in our society and us really coming to grips with something we don't like to talk about. But it is true. I mean, it's obvious. And one death under these kinds of circumstances is one too many. And I do think we're turning a corner, and not to try to dump politics into it, but I was very interested to see Ron DeSantis take a position on this particular case. Well, he said he didn't think it was very good. He didn't think Stand Your Ground in this instance was applicable, but he took a firm stand on the fact that it wasn't right.
April, there were some people that feared it would be open season with Stand Your Ground, but and initially the local sheriff in Pinellas County said he's not going to bring charges. It was up to the Pinellas Pasco state attorney to finally bring these charges after a long review of the case.
I think they did a thorough investigation, which was warranted and needed. I don't think this case was ever a stand your ground case. Under the stand your ground law, you have the right to defend yourself from lethal force. That was never the case in this case, and that came out when they went through their investigation. So I think at the end of the day, the right thing was done. The outcry came because they initially allowed it to stand as a stand your ground case and said that's what it's going to be and we're not going to prosecute. They probably jumped the gun on that and shouldn't have done that, which caused a good deal of the uproar. But at the end of the day, I think after the investigation, they realized that that's it. Stand your ground probably does have a place where it can be applied, but this was not one of them, okay. And that was pretty obvious.
Well, our story number 7. While he was running for the Republican nomination for governor, the Tampa Bay Times reported that Florida's Agriculture Commissioner, Adam Putnam's office, had mishandled background investigations into people applying for concealed weapons permits, raising at least 2 questions. How competent was Putnam in handling this function, one that he advertised on the commission's website, and why his agriculture department is in charge of concealed weapons permits? And first of all,
you raised the issue of competence.
Okay.
This processor is about as competent as Lucille Ball on the candy assembly line, where they were handing these things out willy-nilly, not going through with the proper protocols to make sure that these people were approved. And that was solely because Adam Putnam, and I think this damaged him in this campaign, proudly proclaimed himself to be a proud NRA sellout. Mm-hmm. Which was, I mean, to openly admit that you were a lawn jockey for the NRA was just hardly demonstrating his
independence. Did it hurt him in the Republican primary?
I think it did in the long run. It really did. And the reason we have this problem, of course, is Marion Hammer, who after all this hit the fan, and the suggestion came along, well, you know, maybe the FDLE ought to be responsible for this. She went, what do you mean the FDLE? A law enforcement agency overseeing the handing out?
What do you think? Should the Department of Agriculture hand out concealed
weapons
permits?
Probably not. It probably should be an FDLE thing, because they're doing background investigations and criminal checks on people.
Right.
But, you know, the NRA really didn't have anything to do with the incompetence that was carried on in that office.
Yes,
this happened in 2016 by one person who couldn't do something, and because she couldn't check the national databases, they never cured the problem.
But April,
and that is management. That's a problem with management in the system. That's not the NRA.
There's a long email track record of Marion Hammer calling up the Ag Department and demanding that we speed up the process.
The NRA does not want people carrying guns with concealed weapons permits out there that should not be doing it for whatever their background reason is. That's why the standards are there for concealed carry.
What standards?
There are standards that you have to meet to get a permit.
We were hard-pressed to see those in effect during Madam Putnam's
case.
I think that it hurt Putnam a lot, as he was trying to co-sign for the NRA and ended up looking really crazy in doing that. And I thought he's just slid after that. And Marion Hammer does have that kind of influence. But I think all that's weighing now. I think, you know, you can see where the NRA is having trouble raising money and so forth, and I think that their time has come and gone as a result because of these young people that I know we're going to get to that later, but it was a bad thing to happen. And the thing about Tallahassee is so weird. You know, I was on the State Fair with her talking about agriculture, and it was under Lawton Childs. He just got so sick of this is a piece of nostalgia, but it's true. He got so sick of the State Fair Authority. We're so controversial. It wasn't me. I mean, I was on there, but the administrators and so forth, there was always controversy with State Fair Authority. So he gave it to Crawford. And then he said, take these people. I just can't deal with it anymore. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to bribe Crawford. But I lasted under 2 Republicans after that, and everything calmed down, except when we had George Steinbrenner there. That was interesting. So that's how things get moved around in Tallahassee. It's not necessarily where it actually should be sometimes, but FDLE is probably where it should go.
All right. Story number 6. Voters in Hillsborough County passed 2 sales tax increases, one to enhance public education, the other to improve transportation. Hillsborough now has the highest local sales tax in the state and a pool of money that many hope will improve the quality of life. So we raised the sales tax, April.
Tremendously.
The highest in the state here in Hillsborough County.
Yeah. Yes, and probably much more so than anybody ever thought that both of those taxes would pass. One was a 1% tax for transportation, the other was a 0.5% tax for education. And the backers didn't want both of them on the ballot at the same time for fear that one would cancel out the other. However, the good citizens of Hillsborough County decided that it was a good idea to raise our taxes to the highest in the state.
I was floored that they passed both taxes.
So was I.
I never would have guessed it.
I think that they were given bad information. I don't think that they have any idea how devastating this is going to be to the economy in Hillsborough County, to the small businesses in Hillsborough County. I mean, every commercial lease in Hillsborough County is going to see an increase starting in January 1.
Dan, there is a lawsuit by one of the Hillsborough County commissioners against the tax, against the transportation tax. Is it going to survive?
I don't think so. Commissioner Stacey White just has a real problem with democracy and people voting.
This will be
fleshed out in court. Look, the people of this county decided to tax themselves for these issues. And you're probably right, it may have a long-term effect, but the people have spoken, and they're going to have to live with the vote. Elections have consequences, and if Stacey White doesn't like it... By the way, where was Stacey White? Hold on a minute. Where was Stacey White when it came to the rest of the county commission addressing this issue and taking it on? They ducked it.
That's why these taxes passed, because they were filling a void that was created by inactivity from the county commission with the transportation tax and from the state legislature on the education tax.
I want to get April back in on this.
Well, there's no question that we have needs. This tax, the way this amendment was written for the transportation, is not going to cure the transportation problems that we have in Hillsborough County. It's not going to fulfill the needs that the people think it's going to fulfill, because the campaign wasn't entirely honest. And I think people are going to live to regret that.
All right, we're going to see what happens. Well, our story number 5. Hurricane Michael hits the panhandle in early October, devastating Panama City and Mexico Beach, leaving many people still homeless. Terrible. Gail, you live in the panhandle area. You're up in Tallahassee. The recovery has not, I mean, a lot of people are still homeless.
Yes, and it's really disturbing and it's sad. We still get, in Tallahassee, of course, we're like at the center of everything almost, even for Panama City, requests for food, requests for clothes. There has never been a real method of dealing with the consequences of these horrible hurricanes. When I used to cover them back in the 80s, once we left with the cameras, everything just stopped. The oyster beds, Apalachicola Bay, so many times. We get hit more in the Gulf than any place else. The trees, I mean, we need to have more than, and FEMA doesn't help either. Yeah. They show up months and months later. These people, what they will do though, for example, in that area, Panama City, and there's a straight line straight up to Alabama. A lot of those folks have to abandon their homes because there's nothing there. There's nothing there. And they move back to Alabama because a lot of people migrate down. They move back.
The politicians were there in force. Both parties there in force right after Hurricane Michael in early October. It was election season. Now the politicians have not gone back in weeks.
No, they haven't been gone back in months. Yeah. I mean, and there's no infrastructure.
But should they go back and say, look, we got to fix this?
The legislature needs to, and the governor needs to get in front of this and have a proper emergency fund infrastructure for these disasters, especially in these communities are impoverished.
Yeah,
okay,
already,
especially in Apalachicola. So if they have to have an infrastructure set up, or else we're going to keep recycling this bad stuff.
Story number 4. By a margin of more than 64%, Florida voters surprised many observers in November and voted to automatically restore voting rights to most felons who served their sentences. The approval affects 1.4 million Floridians, most of whom, by the way, are white. All right, Ernest, this is another vote that shocked me. Almost 65% of Florida voters in a year that the Republicans had a good year here in Florida, but I thought this was kind of a liberal-leaning issue. So,
people tried to paint it as a liberal-leaning issue. But the reality is that this is an issue about second chances and about fairness. And we are a state and we are a nation that believes in second chances. And many of these felons who have been convicted for nonviolent offenses deserve a second chance, deserve to have their rights restored. And I think for so long it was denied because of political reasons. And that's why it began to take on this image of being a liberal-leaning issue, but it was really always an issue of fairness.
Dan, I got to ask you, there are some in Tallahassee that say we can't enact this on January 8th. It's got to be addressed by the legislature.
Who cares? the supervisors of elections across the state are saying this is a self-implementing amendment, and the legislature can flop around all at once, but they are already registering people to vote.
All right.
And my understanding is the Senate's not going to deal with it anyway.
They're not.
The state Senate, they just said, no, we're
and
not touching
people
this.
like Jimmy Grant have said,
Republican
have said,
legislator
no, we're not.
All right. Well, story number three. Red tide and blue-green algae outbreaks took a toll on Florida's economy, hitting the fishing and tourism industries hard. Scientists were divided on the cause. Some blame fertilizer runoff in the water. That prompted the incoming governor, Ron DeSantis, to promise that he'll be an environmental governor. All right, this was devastating. Both coasts, Ernest, the last 2 years. Red tide, especially on the West Coast. Especially in those areas like Naples, Fort Myers, Sarasota, Pinellas County, hit really hard.
Well, and I don't think it's an environmental issue, but it's also an economic issue. And you can't underestimate the impact that it has had on those beachside hotels and those beachside restaurants. We're talking about servers who are already relying on tips to eke out a living, being laid off, being told not to come to work. And I really would like to see a statewide campaign asking Floridians, not just tourists, but Floridians, to return to these businesses and lend them support.
Mm-hmm. April, this governor says he's going to be an environmental governor. You think he's going to follow through?
I think he will. I think he has to, because this state is in danger of bad trouble if he doesn't. Because as much as I think that the anti-regulations of the Republican leadership has pulled back on a lot of the things that were in place that would have maybe not prevented this, but would not have exacerbated it as much as it has.
Yeah.
And I think we need to look at things like the fertilizer runoff, not just from commercial, but from yard waste. We need to look at septic tanks. We need to look at a whole bunch of things that are polluting our water and the Everglades issue. Yeah. I mean, we've stopped the natural flow of water through South Florida.
They got to take
and
that
all
in.
Of that has to be fixed.
Yeah. Our story number two. In November, some very close statewide elections for Republicans were, for the most part, victorious by winning four of the five statewide races, including governor and U.S. senator. Florida bucked the national trend toward electing more Democrats. We saw Andrew Gillum, though, a Democrat, his historic run, the first African-American to run for governor. Gail, Florida did turn to the right this year. With the exception of Nikki Fried.
Yeah.
Nikki Fried, the agriculture commissioner.
Well, I mean, you know, Rick Scott did his usual little dance with the bag of money, and that's all good, but I don't know anybody in their right mind that would spend $63 million on 10,000 votes. So that's what happened, and we all watched in horror as it just kind of... And then we have incompetence in Broward County, which for Democrats, when anything's going to happen that's really weird or really bad, we look to Broward County. And as the... As a former communications director for the Democratic Party, I'm not going to do all the cursing that we do about Broward. But all that aside, Nelson ran quite a good race, considering he did not have an extra $63 million to put in. And he probably would have won that race if Broward didn't screw up. On to the other race. Very interesting race. I think Andrew Gillum brought so much enthusiasm and excitement to the race that I think people got lost in it.
All right, we're going to have to move forward.
Okay.
Finally, our number one story of the year. Well, sadly, it was the Parkland school shooting massacre in February, where 17 people were killed and another 17 people were wounded by a former student who carried an AR-15. The tragedy ignited a nationwide debate about guns, about school safety, about mental illness, and about how to recognize potentially dangerous behavior. Florida passed some legislation to try to protect schools, but it failed to outlaw any weapons. Dan, let's start with you. Did we learn anything from that tragedy at Parkland?
Well, we learned that we have too many high-powered weapons on the streets, and we don't need to have them there. Simply enough. And we also learned that these young kids who survived this, they were very media savvy, bright young men and women who actually managed to get Tallahassee to do something. We were talking beforehand, if the legislature had not been in session when this happened, chances are nothing would have been accomplished. So they were able to get some modest regulation.
April, did we learn any lessons from parking?
I sure hope so. And I hope that we learned that we need to watch for signs of danger from specific people, because it's the people behind the actions that cause the problem. The shooter there had given numerous signals that he had problems and should have been dealt with much, much longer before this happened. And hopefully we would learn from that and not allow that to happen anymore.
Gail, are we safer?
I think we will be safer, but I think that young people taught us a lesson, that we don't know everything. And when their lives were at stake, they stood up, and I thought that was was so excellent, because we don't listen to kids. Kids are smarter than we are sometimes, and they don't want to be killed like dogs, you know, in a room. So it worked out. I thought it was very, very encouraging.
And Hoop, what do you say?
I think as a society, we had numbed ourselves to these kind of tragedies since 9/11. And not only these kids remember their ages, they didn't go through 9/11. Mm. Most of them weren't born during 9/11. So they awoke the next morning and said, hey, this isn't right. And there was a sense of anger and outrage that we hadn't seen before with these types of mass shootings. And not only did they take the lead and show some leadership, but they started to awake many of us in the rest of the nation. And here in Tampa, we saw the March for Our Life march, and it had more than 15,000 people. It's considered to be the largest single day protest in the history of this city.
But the federal response that just came out this week, the tone deafness on the part of Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, which went through this all this stuff we need to do, never addressed the issue of banning assault weapons.
And I think the move is really to put more armed people in schools,
yeah.
But there
crazy.
Is not
that's
a
not
move.
The answer.
There's not,
yeah.
That's not the answer.
That's dangerous.
Well, banning weapons is probably not going to happen, and we have to find other ways to deal with these issues so that we can prevent them from happening. You know, banning drugs didn't keep people from being heroin and junkies and doing drugs, okay? They're illegal. So making guns illegal is not going to stop the problem.
Even
criminals,
some
guns,
now we're letting
even
criminals
some
are always going to have guns,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Well, I would argue that the type of guns, we could start there. Mm-hmm. There are kinds of guns that serve no other purpose than for killing other humans. And if we can begin to eradicate those from our streets and from our society, that would be a good step.
Thank you all for a great show. Best of luck in the new year. It's so great to have you here. Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Well, that was Florida This Week, which is a TV show that airs on WEDU-TV Friday nights at 8:30 and Sunday afternoons at 12:30. And my guests on that program, Daniel Ruth, who writes a column for the Tampa Bay Times. Ernest Hooper is also a columnist at the Tampa Bay Times. And the other guest, April Schiff, she was the Republican on that panel. And Gail Andrews was the Democrat on that panel. And you can see the show, too, by going online at wedu.org/FTW if you want to watch it online. But you can also see it on TV, obviously. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa. Suzanne wrote during that show, as we replayed the sound from the show, she said, Republicans will never admit that guns are a problem. Also, doesn't Richard Corcoran's wife and DeSantis's wife own charter schools? I think Corcoran's wife does work for a charter school. He is the new education commissioner of the state of Florida. Not sure about Ron DeSantis's wife. I should know that, but I don't know whether she does or doesn't. And then Suzanne goes on to say, I guess that means not much help for public schools. Thank you, Suzanne, for your email. Well, there was a long Tampa tradition around New Year's, and that was comedian George Carlin would come and do one of his hour-long comedy concerts, usually did it around New Year's. And George passed away a few years ago. There's a somewhat tenuous connection between WMNF and George Carlin. Before we adopted the call letters WMNF, the original founder of WMNF, Arnie Schlansky, suggested that we use the call letters WINO, which was a bit from a George Carlin routine from the 1960s. We decided not to use the term WINO as our call letters, and we adopted WMNF, like William, Mary, Nancy, Frank, or member-sponsored non-commercial FM. But anyway, George Carlin used to come to Tampa, do the New Year's comedy show, and we're going to hear some George Carlin right now, just to remember what a brilliant comedian he was. We'll go back for the first bit to the 1990s. In fact, I think most of what we're going to hear is from the 1990s. This is after the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, which took place in 1991-92. Here's George Carlin from the 1990s doing a comedy bit about war.
Thanks very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Well, a lot of things have happened since the last time I saw you. I just want to talk a little bit about that war in the Persian Gulf. Big doings in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. And the war got good ratings, too, didn't it? Got good ratings. Well, we like war. We like war. We're a war-like people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war in this country every 20 years, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Can't build a decent car. Can't make a TV set or a VCR worth the fuck. Got no steel industry left. Can't get health care to our old people. Can't educate our young people. But we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right? Huh? We can bomb the shit out of your country, all right? Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country, tell them to watch the fuck out, or we'll goddamn bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white, can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans. The Germans are the only ones, and the only reason for that is because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. Bullshit. That's our fucking job. That's our fucking job. Now we only bomb brown people. Not because they're trying to cut in on our action, just because they're brown. Now you might be noticing, I don't feel about that war the way we were told we were supposed to feel about that war. The way we were ordered and instructed by the United States government to feel about that war. See, my mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a really good American because I like to form my own opinions. I don't just roll over when I'm told to. Sad to say, most Americans just roll over on command. Not me. Not me. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. Nothing. Zero. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country, who in the case of the Persian Gulf War were nothing more than unpaid employees of the Department of Defense, and who most of the time function as kind of an unofficial public relations agency for the United States government. So I don't listen to them, I don't really believe in my country, and I gotta tell you folks, I don't get all choked up about yellow ribbons and American flags. I consider them to be symbols, and I leave symbols to the symbol-minded. To me, war War is nothing but a whole lot of prick waving, okay? War is just a lot of men standing around in a field waving their pricks at one another. Simple thing, that's all it is. Men are insecure about the size of their dicks, and so they have to go to war over it. That's what all that asshole jock bull is all about. That's what all that adolescent macho male posturing and strutting in bars and locker rooms is all about. It's called dick fear. Men are terrified that their pricks are inadequate, and so they have to compete to feel better. And because war is the ultimate competition, basically men are killing one another in order to improve their self-esteem. You don't have to be a history major or a political scientist to see the bigger foreign policy theory. It sounds like this. What? They have bigger bomb them! And of course, the bombs and the rockets and the bullets are all shaped like dicks. It's a subconscious need to project the penis into other people's affairs. It's called f***ing with people. So, as far as I'm concerned, that whole thing in the Persian Gulf, nothing more than a big prick-waving fight. In this particular case, Saddam Hussein had challenged and questioned the size of George Bush's and George Bush has been called a wimp for so long. Wimp rhymes with limp. George has been called a wimp for so long that he has to act out his manhood fantasies by sending other people's children to die. Even the name Bush, is related to the genitals without being the genitals. A bush is a sort of passive secondary sex characteristic. Now, if this man's name had been George Boner, well, he might have felt a little better about himself and we wouldn't have had any trouble over there in the first place. This whole country has a manhood problem, big manhood problem in the USA. You can tell from the language we use. Language always gives you away. What did we do wrong in Vietnam? We pulled out. Not a very manly thing to do, is it? When you're f***ing people, you gotta stay in there and f*** them good, f*** them all the way, f*** them till the end, f*** them to death, f*** them to death. Stay in there and keep f***ing them until they're all dead. We left a few women and children alive in Vietnam and we haven't felt good about ourselves since. That's why George Bush had to say in the Persian Gulf, this will not be another Vietnam. He actually used these words, this time we're going all the way. Imagine an American president using the sexual slang of a 13-year-old to describe his foreign policy. If you want to know what happened in the Persian Gulf, just remember the names of the two men who were running that war, Dick Cheney and Colin Powell. Somebody got f***ed in the ass.
George Carlin from the 1990s, and we're going to be listening to George Carlin bits and interviews for the next few minutes here on WMNF in Tampa. Carlin used to come to Tampa about this time of year to do a comedy special at one of the big performing arts centers. He passed away a few years ago, but we're remembering George Carlin and his longtime New Year's connection to Tampa. Some comments have come in. Adam writes regarding Florida this week. He said, one of your female panelists makes a self-defeating argument. She points out that making drugs illegal didn't make people stop doing them. So then, why, Adam writes, do Republicans keep wanting to criminalize drugs and not just legalize them, writes Adam. And then David writes this. He said, thanks for playing the George Carlin clip. He's awesome. Always found it weird and funny that he voice acted for many years on the Thomas the Tank Engine show. The outtakes would be good, predicts David. And then Kevin writes this, a perfect choice is a year-end present to us loyal WMNF listeners, the George Carlin routines. Let's listen to George talk about the real owners of the country next. This also goes back a few years. Here's George Carlin on who owns the country.
My name is Meg Keller.
But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting f***ed by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your f***ing retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. By the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich f***ers who don't give a f*** about them. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue that's being jammed up their holes every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
George Carlin, from probably 20 years ago there. George Carlin, the comedian who passed away in 2008, would make an annual trip to the Tampa Bay area to give a comedy performance on New Year's, and we're honoring George today. George is the one whose routine played on a community radio station about the seven dirty words. That routine resulted in a Supreme Court decision. Saying what exactly were the seven dirty words that you're not allowed to say on radio and TV. We have those words posted in our record library as a warning to our volunteers of what not to play. Jim in St. Pete says, thanks for playing George Carlin today. I can only imagine what he would say if he were still alive with us today. And Blanny says, wow, so true. Regarding the owners of our country, they're also trying to own most of our housing and charging ridiculous rent, writes Blanny. Let's listen to part of an interview that Charlie Rose did with George Carlin a few years ago. And this is George kind of coming to terms with whether or not things can change. And George is pretty cynical about whether or not things can change. And he gives his view about detachment in this interview.
In the last 7 to 8 years, I began to develop a different comic voice and a different perspective. You know, comedy, stand-up comedy is a low art. It's a vulgar art. It's an art of the people. It's not
funny. But it's an art.
But it is an art. It has to do with interpreting the world as you see it and then writing something and then delivering it verbally.
And I found a very liberating position for myself as an artist. And that was, I sort of gave up on the human race and gave up on the American dream and culture and nation, and decided that I didn't care about the outcome. And that gave me a lot of freedom from a kind of distant platform to be sort of amused, to watch the whole thing with a combination of wonder and pity, and try to put that into words.
Not caring about the outcome, what do you mean by that?
Not having an emotional stake in whether this experiment with human beings works. I really don't care. I love people as I meet them one by one. People are just wonderful as individuals. You see the whole universe in their eyes if you look carefully. But as soon as they begin to group, as soon as they begin to clot, when there are five of them or ten, or even groups as small as two, they begin to change. They sacrifice the beauty of the individual for the sake of the group. I decided it was all under the control of groups now, whether it's business, religion, political people, or what, and I would distance myself from wishing for a good outcome. Let it do what it's going to do, and I'll enjoy it as an entertainment.
And I'll reflect on what it is on its own.
And I'll enjoy it for the entertainment. There's a little bit of a sick part in this, too. Yeah. I root for the big comet. I root for the big asteroid to come and make things right. That's the way I put it.
Stir things up.
Yes, to get us back where we were before the first one came and knocked out these dinosaurs and let the ferrets
grow.
We're
talking about comets on this show tonight.
I know. And I'm rooting for that big one to come right through that hole in the ozone layer because I want to see it on CNN. See, I'm here for the entertainment, Charlie. I am. People, these philosophers say, why are we here? I know I am here.
For the entertainment.
The show. Bring it on. I want to see the circus.
But how does this affect your performance and what you bring to stand-up?
Well, I've seen a lot of we've all seen a lot of comedians who seem to have a political bent in their work. And always implicit in the work is some positive outcome, that this is all going to work. If only we do this, if only we pass that bill, if only we elect him, if only we do that. It's not true. It's circling the drain time for humans. I believe this. I honestly believe this. Not just as a comedian, he thinks that. He likes to say that. Yeah. I believe it. And when you say to yourself, I don't care what happens. It just gives you a broader perspective for the art, for the words to emerge, to not care. That's what happened in that 92 show. That's why I could say the planet is fine, the people are... Because the planet will outlast us. It will be here and it will be fine.
Has the subject matter changed?
Well, you're still stuck with what's going on. Yeah. But I don't like topical. I don't like political humor. I don't mention politicians. In fact, I defend them in this particular show. Everyone is on their case. Everyone is always making things.
I defend them
and blame it on the people. This is where it belongs.
You get what you deserve?
Yes, you get what you deserve, and you deserve what you get. And I have a slogan, the public sucks. And it works nicely, and people accept it. Not very enthusiastically, but they understand that it says we the people in that preamble. It doesn't say them the thises and those the thats. It says, hey.
We got on this boat.
And people who hate government are involved in a form of suicide because government is self-government. And if you hate the government, you hate yourself. Yeah. It's the same with the war against nature that mankind goes through. So I just said to myself, it's not going to get better, not in my lifetime. Let me enjoy this and get a little perverse about my commentary on it.
What does perverse mean, though?
Well, to look for where the people think the line is. The people have values, that these amorphous things they call values that they bring to the seat in the theater when they sit down. Yeah. And I like to find out where their line may be and deliberately cross it, disturb them a little, make them uncomfortable, and then bring them with me across the line and make them glad they came. That's what I do. I'm an entertainer. I'm not a doomsayer. I'm not here to preach. I don't do political tracts. But I do entertain. I do a lot of jokes. But I want you to feel a little in danger along the way.
George Carlin with Charlie Rose. Let's listen to a little bit more of a Charlie Rose interview that George Carlin did. And these are all going back. Much of this is going back 20 and almost 20 7 years here on WMNF as we celebrate George Carlin, who used to do a comedy special, a comedy concert in Tampa on New Year's Eve. Let's listen to one more part of an interview that George Carlin did on PBS.
George Carlin started his professional career in radio in 1956 at the age of 19. In the 60s, he spent most of his time honing his style at small clubs with characters like the Hippy Dippy Weatherman. With appearances on television shows like Johnny Carson's Tonight Show and Ed Sullivan, Carlin became a household name. In the 70s, he assumed the irreverent and satirical persona for which he is best known and which has garnered him two Grammys for Best Spoken Word Comedy Album. He returns to his native New York for an HBO comedy special, and we are pleased to have him here. Welcome back.
And I'm pleased to be here. Thank you, Jack.
Number 9 on HBO.
My 9th stand-up show for HBO, yes.
And this one is live. Huh?
Well, I've done two previous ones live. No. The one in 92 of Madison Square Garden was a live show. And one of the earlier ones was live.
You said to me as we sat down that sort of you just learned how to put this whole thing together.
How to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Six or seven years ago.
It happened. I only noticed it in retrospect, so I can't really date it.
Yeah.
But in the last 7 to 8 years, I began to develop a different comic voice and a different perspective. You know, comedy, stand-up comedy is a low art. It's a vulgar art. It's an art of the people. It's not
fun. But it's an art.
But it is an art. It has to do with interpreting the world as you see it and then writing something and then delivering it verbally. And I found a very liberating position for myself as an artist. And that was, I sort of gave up on the human race and gave up on the American dream and culture and nation, and decided that I didn't care about the outcome. And that gave me a lot of freedom from a kind of distant platform to be sort of amused, to watch the whole thing with a combination of wonder and pity, and try to put that into words.
Not caring about the outcome, what do you mean by that?
Not having an emotional stake in whether this experiment with human beings works. I really don't care. I love people as I meet them one by one. People are just wonderful as individuals. You see the whole universe in their eyes if you look carefully. But as soon as they begin to group, as soon as they begin to clot, when there are 5 of them or 10, or even groups as small as 2, they begin to change. They sacrifice the beauty of the individual for the sake of the group. I decided it was all under the control of groups now, whether it's business, religion, political people, or what, and I would distance myself from wishing for a good outcome. Let it do what it's going to do, and I'll enjoy it as an entertainment.
And I'll reflect on what it is on its own.
And I'll enjoy it for the entertainment. There's a little bit of a sick part in this, too. Yeah. I root for the big comet. I root for the big asteroid to come and make things right. That's the way I put it.
Stir things up.
Yes, to get us back where we were before the first one came and knocked out these dinosaurs and let the ferrets
grow. We're talking about comets on this show tonight.
I know. And I'm rooting for that big one to come right through that hole in the ozone layer because I want to see it on CNN. See, I'm here for the entertainment, Charlie. I am. People, philosophers say, why are we here? I know I am here.
For the entertainment.
The show. Bring it on. I want to see the circus.
But so, how does this affect your performance and what you bring to stand-up?
Well, I've seen a lot of comedians who seem to have a political bent in their work. And always implicit in the work is some positive outcome, that this is all going to work. If only we do this, if only we pass that bill, if only we elect him, if only we do that. It's not true. It's circling the drain time for humans. I believe this. I honestly believe this. Not just as a comedian, he thinks that. He likes to say that. Yeah. I believe it. And when you say to yourself, I don't care what happens, it just gives you a broader perspective for the art, for the words to emerge, to not care. That's what happened in that 92 show. That's why I could say the planet is fine, the people are because the planet will outlast us. It will be here, and it will be fine.
Has the subject matter changed?
Well, you're still stuck with what's going on, but I don't like topical. I don't like political humor. I don't mention politicians. In fact, I defend them in this particular show. Everyone is on their case. Everyone is always making things.
Politicians are bad.
I defend them and blame it on the people. This is where it belongs.
You deserve.
Yes, you get what you deserve. I mean, you deserve what you get. And I have a slogan, the public sucks. And it works nicely. And people accept it, not very enthusiastically, but they understand that it says we the people in that preamble. It doesn't say them the thises and those the thatses.
It
says, hey.
We got on this boat.
And people who hate government are involved in a form of suicide because government is self-government. And if you hate the government, you hate yourself. Yeah. It's the same with the war against nature that mankind goes through. So I just said to myself, it's not going to get better, not in my lifetime. Let me enjoy this and get a little perverse about my commentary on it.
What does perverse mean, though?
Well, to look for where the people think the line is. The people have values, that these amorphous things they call values that they bring to the seat in the theater when they sit down. And I like to find out where their line may be and deliberately cross it, disturb them a little, make them uncomfortable, and then bring them with me across the line and make them glad they came. That's what I do. I'm an entertainer. I'm not a doomsayer. I'm not here to preach. I don't do political tracts. But I do entertain. I do a lot of jokes. But I want you to feel a little in danger along the way.
And so people who go to hear you.
All right. Well, that was a mistake, obviously, replaying that a bit over and over again. Sorry about that, but hope you enjoyed it. That was George Carlin from an interview that he did on the Charlie Rose Show more than 20 years ago. And George would always make a New Year's Eve stop here in the Tampa Bay area for many years. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to hear more comedy because we're going to hear the Jimmy Dore Show from 2 weeks ago. So stick around. But first, we're going to get the news headlines from NPR. This is WMNF Tampa.